comments are adjourned.
The SORO bill, as I refer to, is a little more comprehensive than the committee substitute. So let's get that one addressed first.
Good afternoon. I'll try not to. I always love the 8 over to give you a good sense of what the proposal does, but I try not to take too much of it, too many times in the idea of what the purpose of this is. This bill does. It is very similar to the draft that was before the legislature last year. I think it was House Bill 4041 on the House side, and I believe it was also introduced in the Senate as well. And it does set out an extensive revision of our state program relating to the permitting process for oil and gas operators, and provides several different revisions to the state code relating to giving prior notice before entering lands, providing notice form for getting for construction of the well. It also provides the concept of allowing surface owners to have the right to purchase gas at the rate of the well needs being sold, and also requires a surface owner's use agreement to be developed to allow certain information to be disclosed. And I'll get to it, and I'll go through it in a little detail. And then sets up a conditional bond for the industry imposed if there's a failure entered in that agreement to protect the surface owner's rights. So basically, that's the general gist of it. I will take some time to go through this bill in some detail. First off, we create a new Article 5A in this proposal. We, in our draft, we decided to prefer Article 7A, which is a little more, this is stylistic thing. But the findings of the bill, as this before you, provides out that the talks about what the problem is and so that the surface owners would see it. And expressly states that the owners of the surface property where oil and gas lease operates, let's say you find that in many cases they do not also own the mineral or any right to the royalty, which is to be done the drilling of is going to occur. Mm-hmm. Even when the surface owner also owns the mineral, the surface owner maybe have signed a standard lease that sets out the criteria for act for development. This is industry prepared lease, and I guess the proof would be that this is the benefit of the operator. The construction of oil and gas well on well site, laying of pipelines, et cetera, has an enormous impact on the value of land and use of the surface owner's interest in their own land. And under common law, unless changes by the terms of a severance steered deed or lease, the concept of fairly necessary is the is authorizes the oil and gas operator to do whatever that they need to do, but they must give due regard or accommodate the interest of the surface owner. And this is the regulation of the FASC, which regulates the relationship between the communities, how the contracts provide otherwise. The only notice that the surface owner is required to do by state code is when an operator plans to drill a well, the surface owner is to give a notice is required to be given the surface owner at the time the application is filed and already contains the well site location, access road location that the operator has already chosen to survey. So there's not really any opportunity in the current system for the surface owner, by law, given an opportunity to influence and have input on the locations of these roads and well locations. The surface owner has the right to comment on the permit application, and if he or she gets the comment on the Office of Oil and Gas within 15 days of filing the permit, this they would contend is too short of a time. The state has. They can only change the operator permit on well or oil and gas based on the service owner's comments if the drilling activity proposed would cause sedimentation, would create a problem endangering water resources and or would damage public lands or create a safety hazard. And I guess the conclusion would be that they would, other factors should also be considered. The state cannot change the operator permit to drill because the operator plans fail to recognize the service owner's interest in common law rights. The plan set out permit is fairly necessary. The only recourse is to take that operator to court, which may also require sometimes the posting of a bond. And as a result of this, many operators take advantage of a surprise, both advantage of more knowledge, years of experience, and have drilled many wells before. As a result of that, many operators fail to give due regard to the preferences of service owners and maybe more than is fairly necessary to fulfill their drilling activities. And another finding is that all one statute provides that many surface owners are entitled to compensation for the use of their surface land. under that statute, surface owners are not entitled to their land's full market value or diminution of value that the drilling can cause adjacent to the well site. And although the gas well may be produced from under the surface owner's land, and although the gas may be produced out of a well placed on their pipeline, they have no right to connect to the well for their own personal use. So that's basically that sets out the concerns that the bill is attempting to address. There's provisions for a establishment of a surface owner compensation agreement. This bill provides what the agreement shall contain, and things like names, locations, and physical addresses of the owners and operators, locations of the well sites they propose, specifications of construction of the well sites, disposal areas, roads, pipelines, etc., should be set out in the agreement. Specifications applicable for the life of the well, including reclamation pits, disposal areas, etc., specifications for the temporary revegetation for the site well, and all those associated construction activities, specifications for maintenance well sites, including without limitation the use of gates, appliances, and gate access control practices, and also for roads and their construction and maintenance. And also the compensation of the service owner pursuant to Article 7, Chapter 10, or the common law without limitation, it's a statement of what that is. Compensation for the value of the land should be offered, and information relating to the foreseen occupation and uses of the land as they occur during the operation. A service use and compensation agreement may include any other documents that will be included in the well permit. And service owner compensation agreement may include also a statement of no objection, which that relates to Copeland Mapping Development. A service use and compensation agreement may not waive damages for breach of agreement, violation of state or federal law related to environmental information, etc. The last provision of service owner compensation agreement makes it clear that they cannot agree to violate any state or federal reclamation requirement that would be required of the well developer. So if they wanted to violate the Clean Water Act in some way and harm the, and not have a settlement pond that was properly constructed or something like that, they couldn't waive the right to do that in the agreement. So.
Wouldn't be able to waive that anyway.
I know, maybe they wouldn't, but it is set out expressly that the agreement couldn't contain any type of provision like that. Then section 5, excuse me, this is the provisions related to the initial interest on the land. This proposed bill would say at least 15 days before entering the surface land for inspection, measurements, survey, that they provide notice to the surface owner, and it reflects that the notice is currently given under state law, I think, is the tax department records of who the owner of the surface is. And that all that can be waived by the surface owner. Deem an appropriate notes also shall include information relating to keeping of a contact the individual who is developing the site, the dates and times of entry into the land, a copy of the of this particular act, and section Article 7, which is the title of the current law, entitles surface owners to the ability to be compensated for their damages to their surface as a result of any well activity, development, chopping down trees, etc., things like that. They use cornfields, things like that, damages. They are currently under current law entitled to be reimbursed for those damages. And then another information that they need to provide is copies of the Senate Control Manual, explanation of the surface owner's rights to challenge the real property tax assessment of their land, because it can go down as a result of the loss of use of the surface. An offer to meet with the surface owner to help work out locations of roads, etc., and the meeting at the meeting operator shall point out and explain the preferences, etc., and review their proposals and try to work out something agreeable with the owner at that point. And then section 6 sets out the notice of planned surface use and provides remediation. It says if you've already got a compensation agreement, this section doesn't apply, but it sets out a process if they're unable to agree to allow the to go forward, and then a mediation process can be implemented to try to resolve any final activities and results of the plan. Notice the plan will work will include information that's related to the being able to locate the operator, the proposed use of compensation as may be required by law. The notice of plan will work includes a statement that the parties cannot agree, and then either party may request mediation. Either party may request that the parties enter into prior mediation that lasts 15 or more than 30 days after the notice of the plan well has been received. The mediator can be a person who elects an individual with a real estate agent, a real estate appraiser, a forester, or any of those who are licensed by those entities, and also you can use a mediator from the state bar, which would be an attorney trained by mediation. Parties may agree to use the mediator. It does not meet these requirements if both parties agree to do that. And this sets up in this section in quite detail the scheduling of the mediations and how they are to be handled in an expedient fashion to keep the process going. Unless the operator submits to agreed surface use and compensation agreement, application was approved. Oil and gas has no well work permit application shall be submitted to the Office of Oil and Gas until 45 days have passed. So this allows for the mediation process to go forth. Effective service use and compensation agreement bond, this basically would say if it, in the statement of no objections is included in a service use and compensation agreement, that's laid in Article 6 of this chapter, I think I believe that's the COVID mandate as well, that requires that the other mineral owners to waive their interest because of their, in some cases you have cold teams and they have to be notified of the drilling through it so that they make sure that their interests are protected. Those type of notices need to be given. If, also, if an agreement upon surface use and compensation is not submitted to the permit application, no permit can be issued unless the operator submits proof that he has furnished a surety bond. And this proposed legislation would provide a surety bond would be to the benefit of the surface owner in an amount of $20,000 for each permitted well. So that would basically be an additional bond in addition to any other fine they would have to protect for environmental problems. So currently in the current law, you can have a blanket bond or you can have individual bonds on your wells. Finally, if the surface owner agreement was provided by separate signatures for the reason of the bond, this basically sets up to how the process for release, so they've completed their activities, that they've entered into another agreement, or those factors on page 11, top of the page, which is set out when the bond can be released. On the section 8, basically provides for the purchase of the gas by the owners, and would require that the persons who are service owners would be allowed to pay for the cost of providing a gathering line for one residence or farm or residence or associated farm. The service owner would be responsible for all reasonable costs, and they would be operator may require the service owner to pay for any gas at a price no greater than the use to determine the royalty owner's payment and the initial lease. The operator would have a duty to warn of dangers associated with using the gas, etc., but otherwise they would be held harmless for that use. Options for surface use and revegetation, the Office of Oil and Gas shall include its soil erosion, sediment control manual, alternatives for road construction. This is directed towards the DEP. Any requirements of soil erosion and sediment control manual would be waived by the inspector of the oil and gas. Only be waived. The service owner also agrees in writing to the type of agreement. And daylighting, which is the practice of opening up the roads, trees, chopping down trees, etc., clear the road for exposure by sunlight so the snow and water can melt off, would be prohibited without consent of the service owner. There's a special effective date in there as well. And then the remainder of the changes to current law in Article 6, and those first changes on page 15, just makes them so require that an erosion and sediment control plan will accompany each application for a well work permit, including without limitation, would also include acreage disturbance for the pipeline, the pipe spacing for access roads, draining structures. And the next, on page 16, I need to ask Mr. McMahon what the purpose of this particular provision, subsection 8. I had trouble ascertaining what it meant. So so I apologize for not being able to explain that section change on page 16. It doesn't seem to be too specific, but I'm not sure I understand what it's trying to do there. Following on page 18, there's a change in current law which would say that any it expands reimbursement for a diminution of value, including to adjacent lands that market value, which is diminished by the presence of a well, should also be compensated for. And there's also, on page 18 and 19, there's some changes to the notification criteria, current law. This is in Article 7, which is the reimbursement for a certain sum of damages. And that says they have 9 days after the drilling rig is removed, no later than 2 years after the filed notice of reclamation, to file a claim. And every other owner requesting a copy of either a current location or personal service. This is just language relates to a person may request notice of reclamation. Other folks can request that notice. And finally, there's a couple of changes on page 18 and 19 and 20, relates to the arbitration process and payment of fees and notices thereof as well. And that's basically the proposal as provided by the Service Owners Group.
Are there questions of council on this particular proposed legislation?
Let me ask you just a couple things for clarification. You mentioned service owners as a group. Service owners, it seems to me, could have different definitions. I mean, you have a service owner who has land where the well is active and drilled. You have other service owners who might be service owners over a pooling situation. Is there some distinction in the bill or some definition? Because you have a lot of surface owners' rights in here, is there any distinction in those?
Well, I think the my understanding of how this operates is that the only surface owners who are impacted by this legislation would be the surface owners where the actual drilling activities occur. If they were drawing gas from out from other adjacent properties, surface owners in those properties wouldn't have any interest or claim per se, unless there was a structure or something relating to the activity based on their property, then they would be brought in to this jurisdiction of this proposal as well.
Okay. Yeah. How about the liability issues here? You touched briefly, I think, upon the liability issues, but would this bill add significantly to the right to file suit? Does it include punitive damages? Those are a couple questions.
Well, there's no specific, and I stand to be corrected, but there's no specific reference to punitive damages in here. It would be whatever the current laws relate to. And I know there's a couple provisions under trespass and destruction of personal property where if you destroy trees without authorization, you can expect treble damages and other surface structures. You can be special damages under current law, extra damages under current law. But this particular provision doesn't address those interests, except for the fact that they have a lot more rights under this proposal to encourage an agreement between the operator and the service owner.
In that regard, following along with the information provided so far, basically one of the aspects of this bill would be notice from the service owner prior to the time of the application. How long that notice is supposed to be?
Notice of initial drilling on surface land to be 15 days prior to entering on the surface.
Notice of the end of the land?
Surface on.
Yes. Okay. There's a surface plan, which I think is required between the driller and the surface owner. And then you can mediate that. You have 45 days to mediate that. And of course, that may or may not produce a solution. So after mediation, there still has to be some resolution, I would suppose. How much more time are we talking about from the time of the initiative, the drilling process, to when it can actually drill? And obviously, my concern is the difference between having the bill, which does advantage to surface mine owners, or to surface owners, number one, but also a bill which could be so at that detrimental level that it would be pernicious to the whole drilling process.
Well, I know that failure to come to any agreement, they can still proceed with the demand to post an additional bond. So I think that's the big incentive for the operators to be required to get these agreements with surface owners as the bond. I think you go through the mediation process that's hopefully designed in this bill. I'm hopefully, but my understanding of how it would work is the timeframes relate to the getting mediation resolved as soon as possible, and then if there is a successful agreement reached, then the bond would be released at that point. And if failure to reach an agreement, then the bond would continue until the operation was complete, and then they removed all their equipment, et cetera, when well completing its useful life.
You're saying that the operation's complete?
Until they go in and claim the bond.
Oh, which could be very long.
It could be 100 years.
Thank you. 100
years.
Are there any further questions in council? Okay, we'll have the presentation by fellow council of the committee proposed legislation. And then what we'll do is have the speaker, if you want to speak, make presentations, and then we'll give us interest.
The committee version also creates a Service Owners Protection Act, and its purpose is to give service owners advance notice of oil and gas operations conducted on the property, and it also encourages owners and operators to enter into an agreement which establishes the terms of compensation for the use of land during operations. The heart of the bill is actually two sections. Section 3 deals with giving two notices to the service owners, and Section 4 establishes the conditions for conducting operations without a compensation agreement. The first notice that is required to be given requires operators to notify service owners at least 15 days in advance of initial entry onto the lands to conduct certain activities that don't involve service to service operations, and this would be something inspecting the land for where roads are going to be placed or where wells are going to be placed, and surveying, that kind of thing. The second notice must be given at least 30 days before entering the land to conduct actual operations. And that notice is required to contain certain information. It would have to have a sufficient explanation of the planned operations to enable the service center to evaluate the impact of the operations on the owner's land. Have to contain contact information of the operator and the operator's authorized representative. It would also have to contain a copy of the Service Owners Protection Act, which this new article would create, and the Act governing the Land Use and Damage Compensation Act, which I believe is Article 7 in Chapter 22. And then it would also have to contain a proposed surface use and compensation agreement, which addresses at a minimum certain issues, and those issues would be the location and maintenance of roads, wells, and gathering pipelines, terms of ingress and egress, construction, placement, and maintenance of pits associated with planned operations, the use and impoundment of water on surface land, removal and placement of plants, vegetation, any surface water drainage changes, interim and final reclamation plans, actions to minimize surface damage, indemnification for injuries caused by the operations, and any offer of compensation for the use of the surface and any damage from the operations. The service owner under Section 3 would have 20 days to either accept the agreement or reject it and propose an alternative agreement. In the event that an agreement is not reached, then Section 4 comes into play, and that allows if the agreement hasn't been reached within that 30-day period, then the operator can begin operations after posting a $5,000 bond for the benefit of the service owner. This would be in addition to the bond requirements of Article 6, which is the permitting section. Once the bond is furnished, it cannot be released until the operator and service owner have reached an agreement, a service compensation agreement, or all wells have been plugged and abandoned and no operations have been conducted for 6 years, or the service center has been compensated for any damages caused by the operations. And the remaining provisions in the Act provide for payment of attorney fees and costs in certain circumstances, a three-year statute of limitations, which is consistent with the three-year statute of limitations found in Article 6. Contains a definition section, and it also allows operators to enter the land without a compensation agreement or a bond agreement under certain conditions, and that is to protect the public health and safety and the environment without complying with those notice of bond requirements of the state. And that's pretty much it.
Any questions of council?
Council, do you explain to me how the current arbitration provisions work for surface damage?
Yes.
Is there a current arbitration provision?
There's a provision. I think there is, and I think it's over in Section 7, or excuse me, Article 7 of Chapter 22. I don't know them off the top of my head, but... there is a section that deals with arbitration. The developer has paid the service owner to negotiate some of the compensation within 60 days after the date of notification. That's not it. Let's see here. That's a section that. If it hasn't been paid, the service owner may within 80 days after the notification. Mail it, either bring an action for compensation in circuit court or let them stand by written notice delivered by personal service certified mail to have a matter compensated through the issue of compensation be decided by binding arbitration. And that would be the arbitration requirements set out in Chapter 55 of the Code. You have settled negotiations, offer and counteroffers. So there is a provision that states with that specificity, but there is an opportunity for binding arbitration.
That's if you don't agree on the amount of damages.
Right.
You can go directly to the court.
Yes, you. Either one.
Right. Does it have any fee shifting in it?
I'm going to say, let's see. I don't see any. I don't see any fee shift. You mean attorney fees? Each party shall pay the compensation of the arbitrator, and looks like if you have additional arbitrators, each party pays the top. Apparently, it provides for three arbitrators. Each party selects an arbitrator, pays the cost of their arbitrator, and pays one half the cost of the third arbitrator, and or such party's own costs as the case may be.
Are there any further questions
of
council?
When you were talking earlier about the notice requirements here, I think you said 15 days notice of land notice.
Initial entry on the land to conduct operations that don't involve service to service.
Okay, and then 30 days for what involved in
that? That's the 30-day notice where you're going to go in and actually serve the service.
Okay, so it's not on top of each other. Those are two separate sections.
Correct. That's the way I read it.
All right. I would assume that you could not file an application until after that initial 30 days. Or is that a wrong assumption?
That would be a fair assumption.
Okay.
It's not indicated in here one way or the other. It appears to me that probably. Give me a second here. Actually, it only speaks to initial entry. I don't see anything in here that would restrict the application from being filed, but according to these two sections, you're going to still have to give notice before you actually go in on the lands.
You mentioned indemnification for injuries caused. This is a little later, and I'm sorry, this is kind of a vague question because I didn't catch it. Indemnification for injuries caused to what? Do you remember?
Oh, to others on the surface. Let's see. I'll read it to you. but it's indemnification to indemnify, I assume, the service owner for any injuries caused by the operations to other individuals on the land.
Well, I'm kind of a little mystified by that. Caused by what?
By the operations.
Well, operations, as I understand it, is actually the removing the gas from the ground.
Clearing the land, drilling, constructing roads, anything like that. Operator indemnification for injuries to persons caused by the operator.
Okay. I guess, well, I can ask my questions separately from you, not take all the time here, but a person who's non-related to the owner, they could recover under that provision, under that statutory provision.
Anyone is injured.
That's the way I read it. Well, if it's, again, just for the sake of argument, they would have that cause of action just under the strict negligence under the ordinary negligence anyway, I would assume, but we have under the negligence.
It's a fair assumption.
I'm just not sure what we're adding. And while we're adding anything that would not fit with a nearer to the benefit of somebody other than the landowner.
Well, I think what this clarifies is the operator has to identify, would have to identify the service owner in the event that the service owner is probably sued for injuries caused by the operations to someone.
Okay.
That's the way I'm reading it.
One other question.
That's a roll page fine.
Okay, that's all right. Thank you.
Are there any further questions? Yes, Senator Hunter.
I just had one question. If there's not an agreement on the plan, the proposed plan, then it says that the parties agree they can go into binding arbitration or mediation. Who decides that, whether they go into binding arbitration or mediation?
Where are you reading from, that Senator? In my bill? Or the second bill?
I think it's the one you're talking about.
On
page 5, down line 20.
Is that the wrong bill? That's the section that deals with, which allows the operator to enter onto the land to conduct operation without a service, without a compensation agreement. But there's nothing there about binding arbitration. I think that's the other bill.
Okay, thank you. I think it didn't put the service owner and operator agree for binding arbitration.
Okay.
I'm looking at line 18, page 5. If the proposed agreement is rejected, the service owner may enter into negotiations with the operator, including, if the parties agree, binding arbitration or mediation. So there's nothing mandatory about that.
Yeah, I was trying to get it.
Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Okay.
We've got about an hour and 10 minutes. We've got several speakers on behalf of service owners and at least two speakers actually on behalf of the industry. Mr. Whitman's name. Okay. You're going to speak? Okay, just the six people that have identified. Okay. So if we can give a 5 minutes each, and then that would leave 30 minutes left for industry folks to speak. We're total of 30 minutes as well. That would give 10 minutes for questions. Let's leave, how about 5 minutes each?